All right, so let's make it plain. Welcome back to the Make It Plain Wayne podcast, Elevated Friendship. How do you feel about all this going on? Now, I'm going to tell you how I feel, but how do you feel? Let's make it plain.
Mr. Ridiculous, Steve, and I am Wayne with Make It Plain Wayne. This is a collaboration that needs to happen.
No doubt.
So, Steve, I mean, I got to throw this Obi-Wan your way and Miss Marvel your way. So I'm not going to pull any punches. I'm not going to sweet talk this at all. We have the master and apprentice lesson between Obi-Wan and Anakin, and between Vader and Reva. Please give me your, because I'm losing my mind right now.
That was probably my favorite episode from the season so far. And honestly, to me, and I'll get into it a little bit later, I guess, that was Star Wars that we've been wanting, but I think we have become so accustomed to our own expectations that we are letting our expectations outweigh our sort of jubilation. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
So like the Master and Apprentice shot or that scene with Obi-Wan and Anakin was tremendous because I like how they were bouncing back and forth between what was happening in real time and what was happening in the past. Mm-hmm. And how Obi-Wan was still teaching lessons. You know, he was still kind of giving this education to now Darth Vader because he's not that far removed from being Anakin. You know, this is what, 10 years in the future?
Yeah, and that's what I love, that they show the scenery, you know, on the home planet, the Jedi Council. Is this beautiful, nice place. There's a beautiful sky. There's that nice floor, and they're going at it. And I think we forget, like, you know, they're using a great actor to show his physical presence. I think my boy put on it. It's like he's been lifting a little bit and eating good.
Yeah, he's definitely, you know, some people were remarking that, you know, the CGI didn't de-age him enough. I think that it was fine because it wasn't a distraction. Mm-hmm. I think if they tried to pull too much off of him, it would have been like Robert Downey Jr. within the flashbacks in the Avengers.
Right.
Where, like, you know, little skinny dude when you know he's not like that. So it didn't bother me. That part didn't bother me as much. But I like the action. These two stepped right back in their roles. They raised the bar for lightsaber fights.
Oh, 100%. This episode?
Well, not just this episode, but if you go back to the prequels, lightsaber fighting had been a lot more like dueling, like fencing. Mm-hmm. It was very much structured, you know, very, very blooded white collar.
Yeah.
When they got into the mix and the physicality came in, they're spinning, flipping. Luke, back in the original trilogy, Luke was a little more visceral. He was a little more forceful, you know, as he towed the dark side a little bit. But these guys were acrobatic. They were moving faster. They had flips and tricks. And, of course, the epic duel on Mustafar. So it was fun to see that aspect brought back into it where, you know, the fights that even Rey and Kylo Ren had were not like this. These two are the best lightsaber duelists throughout this entire series. And I love that they got back to that.
Now, and you can clarify, you know, if I'm wrong on this, but isn't Obi-Wan style supposed to be more like a Tai Chi sword and Anakin style supposed to be more like a samurai fighting style? Because that's what it looked like.
Yeah, Anakin is a lot more aggressive. So Anakin is, his style is more front facing, come at you. And then, but he did morph into being able to use different styles, because when he fought, Darth, I'm drawing a blank. Why am I drawing a blank? Christopher Lee, who was his character again?
Dooku.
There we go. There you go. When he fought Dooku the first time, he was just aggression. When he fought Dooku the second time, it's been noted that he was borrowing styles to beat Dooku. So Anakin learned later on how to adapt styles, which is something that Obi-Wan was able to do. Obi-Wan's style was definitely more defensive and parry and use the aggressor's energy against him. So that's where the more Tai Chi style came in. Kind of like almost like a matador who would sway the fight and use that energy back against the bull.
Definitely. So because you put that so well, let's go to the new matador, the Vader matador, that fight scene between Darth Vader and Reva toward the end. I mean,
it was meant to mirror the fight between that younger Anakin and Obi-Wan. If you look at it, it mirrors exactly what happened, except for Vader didn't have a sword.
Right. Well,
Vader didn't have the lightsaber.
But let's be honest here. Like, there's what's the young Sith lady that is in the Clone Wars show a lot? She's kind of pale faced with the.
Asajj Ventress.
Asajj Ventress. So I don't know how Reva would stack up against Asajj Ventress, but up against the baddest mofo. I mean,
yeah, she wouldn't stack up against Asajj. Like, let's be real. Okay. Asajj was trained by Dooku, and Asajj Ventress was fully trained.
Okay.
Reva was basically on her own, and they continually allude to the fact that, you know, she was like Aladdin. She's a gutter rat that they picked up and molded. And you can't tell me that somewhere in there, Vader didn't remember this little Jedi that he should have killed.
Right. Well, because, it might have been all smoke and mirrors, but, you know, she did make it up to Grand Inquisitor. She's, you know, moving up the food chain. Much respect to Moses Ingram, beautiful actress, beautiful person. I was just like, there's just no way you come up. This is Anakin and Vader. There's just no way.
Yeah, but I believe her reasoning. I mean, like, you escape that horror. And you're hell bent on getting revenge, and the Grand Inquisitor even says so. It turns out revenge really is, you know, something to keep you going. You can, you know, escape death with that, and she did, because we get that flashback that the Anakin in that night actually stabbed her.
Yeah,
and thought he ended her. So that's what I'm saying, is a Force-sensitive, most powerful Jedi to date, you can't tell me that he would forget the kids that he killed. Because he even said it when he killed the sand people, when he killed the Tusken. He's like, I slaughtered them, every single one. The women, the children, you know, so he's bearing this pain from his own actions, even though the justification of why he's doing it keeps him from feeling the guilt up top. Like, he knows he's wrong, but he's got something to do. You know what that reminds me of is the operative in Serenity, where he's like, you know, we're trying to build a better world, and it's not for me or you, you know. The things I do. And so that's kind of what he's going on. He's on this mission to save Padme and do all of this out of some twisted mind for good and his ultimate power. But he's still bearing the guilt. That's what's tearing him up inside. And you can see it. That's why the flashbacks keep giving that energy. So that last fight mimicked that, because he even took her sword he took, I keep saying sword because we're talking about dueling, but he took her lightsaber, mm-hmm. Just like Obi-Wan took his to end that lesson.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. You, when you talk about flashback, how did that plot twist not bake your brain? I mean, she's a Jedi youngling. The fact that she was there,
I knew my heart dropped. I knew that was coming. I had a feeling because I'm going to keep it 100. Black characters in Star Wars are rare. And so when you have a little Jedi, a little black Jedi girl, in one of the flashbacks in episode one of the series, then I'm like, okay, she's there for because we now have a grown woman, you know, of ethnicity as an inquisitor. And again, that's no knock on Star Wars because I don't want to go that route with it, but I'm saying it makes it a little obvious.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like Maze Windu. Yeah.
Exactly. It makes it a little bit obvious when you start looking at casting and that kind of thing. So like, you know, John Boyega, same thing. John Boyega's right. in there. John Boyega's going through the series. You know, if they show a little Finn, you would pick him out in a heartbeat because you know, ethnicity belies the nature of casting in Star Wars. And so I don't want to put that on the universe. I'll put that on the casting.
So my last question, because I don't want to hold you too long. I got to get into just Vader's power in general. Because, I mean, obviously they face off against a Jedi youngling. That wasn't too much for him, but he literally ripped a starship out of the air, ripped the doors off of, tore it apart. Like he froze a ship in midair. And so I'm like, did the cyborg body increase his power?
No, it was actually meant to destroy it. That's documented. That the Emperor knew how strong he was. And so there were things put into his suit that would cause him constant pain, that would restrict what he could do. It made him more susceptible to Force lightning, so that the Emperor could control him. Like, it's well documented that Vader's suit actually weakened him. So right now, he's probably at peak Vader because the suit is brand new, and his rage and his immaturity in his power in the Force, but his immaturity emotionally probably gave him the wherewithal to fight this suit. And that's why he's always like when somebody's in a Bacta tank, usually they're healed up. Vader's suit kept injuring him. So that's why he was always in a Bacta tank.
Wow. And just never checked the suit.
I don't know that he knew that his pain, his perpetual pain, and it could be somewhere, you know, someone could probably tell us exactly the point, but it could be somewhere in the comics and some other literature. But I don't think he knew that his perpetual pain was actually being caused by the suit.
Well, because, I mean, you know,
that's what the Emperor does. You know, he's sneaky, snaky.
So, like, replaying the you know, master and apprentice, replaying, you know, the Vader and Reva fight, I go back to them fighting on that volcano. Like, he got burned up and cooked up really bad. Like, really bad. So I'm like, if those third degree burns aren't healed properly, you're just stuck for the rest of your life.
You mean Vader?
Yeah, Vader.
Well, but that's the thing, is he was there on Mustafar for a while. Emperor got to him. But remember the mind games that the Emperor had played with him to even get him to change sides.
Oh, yeah.
So he's a little boy, a hurt little boy alone in the world. The Emperor just had to keep twisting him. He would never have questioned why his suit hurt. He would have thought he was in perpetual pain. So those burns, even third degree, Bacta is like magic. You know, Bacta is technology from their world. So if they can have light that cuts through everything in a laser sword, a back to tank would be the most basic of medical that could get you all the way back. I mean, we got cyborg hands and fingers. You know, everybody in Star Wars loses a limb, everybody's fine. So why would he be in perpetual pain just from third degree?
Right. Well, so we can clearly heal both. Yeah.
Clearly.
Doesn't Boba Fett have that chamber?
Boba Fett has the chamber. Luke was in the chamber. You know, everybody in Jedi sense, you know, somebody took force lightning. Like, these people are back to tanks are magic. Why would Vader not heal up? Because his suit kept him injured.
Wow.
Injured enough to be hampered. And like I said, somewhere that's proven, somewhere that's out there, that's documented, that Vader had, you know, I don't know if it was needles or something, but it was always constantly keeping his body in agony. So even just using the Force and using his suit caused him to need to be rehealed all over again.
Now, speaking of rehealed all over again, I'm going to transition to Ms. Marvel, because talking about healing, I mean, the way we ended the show was being told that you can't talk about your grandma and your great grandma because they brought so much shame to the family. Like, man, I'm loving
the dynamic of this show. mainly just because that culture is so similar to Black culture, man. And shouldn't do what you can and can't do. You know, they go into the separation of the women in the mosque. And religion and all of this, like, it's such a cool show that gives you some social dynamic without knocking you over the head with it.
Now, am I wrong in saying this? Like, I feel like I can watch this show because I'm a girl dad, and I feel like I could be this girl's dad.
Yeah, it's definitely that. Like, what I did not expect was the level of, how do I say it in a good way? Because I don't mean immaturity, but it's definitely a kid's show. It's meant for young people.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the critique I've been seeing is misguided because you got, you know, old internet dudes looking at a teenage girl's show.
Right.
Yes, it's a Marvel show, but it's meant for kids.
Right.
And because it's the tone, even the tone of the serious moments are talking like and to a young lady.
Well, but can I also add, we just came off of Turning Red and Encanto, and the show isn't a one-person dialogue. There is a full family in both films.
Absolutely.
And so you're going to side with somebody, either the dad, the mom, the brother. You know,
well,
the
and even
brother
if you don't,
with his,
even
you
if
know,
you
black
don't side,
wife.
and even if you don't side with them, you're going to understand them. And so I think what you said is true. Like, being a girl dad, I can understand this show better than someone who is really just watching it as a Marvel fan.
Right.
Like, I get Kamala Khan. I'm not just a girl dad. I'm a single parent raised only child, you know, only boy in a house full of women. You know, I'm an oldest child. I get, you know, I'm a preacher's kid, so there's the religion part. Like, I get this girl's struggle. And then as an athlete, to be set apart from people who in my own family cannot do the special things I can do.
Right.
I get what she's going through.
Yes. And that you mentioned it earlier, you get the Scott Pilgrim and John Hughes kind of energy.
Man, like, I'm loving it. Like
the
like,
artwork in the background.
To your viewers, or excuse me, to your listeners who do not know about Scott Pilgrim, please, if you are watching Ms. Marvel, go watch Scott Pilgrim. Because, if the show is doing what that movie did so well, and it's bringing, you know, they're talking about fighting and superheroes and technology and and life and the struggles and emotional things, and it's made palatable and bearable by this sort of video game aspect going on in the background. But yes, it's how but it's not distracting. It's right, additive to the environment. I love it.
Right. And that, I don't know, I think that's one of the things I fell in love with immediately, was because they're talking about things, they're thinking things, and it's on the brick, it's on the building, it's on stuff in the background. And then, now
it's moving, and
so I don't know where this show will go ultimately toward the end, because I've heard she's an Inhuman and they're kind of doing a different story, but just her love for Captain Marvel sets up kind of that Iron Man and Tony, or Iron Man and Spider-Man, or
I'm definitely wondering if they're going to do that in terms of even just a little cameo.
Right.
I think it would be cool, because I think this show is going to have more goodwill than Captain Marvel had in terms of, you know, when some of the fandom menace came after him, and they come after Disney for being quote unquote woke. I think this show is being done and handled in a really good way that does not evoke that kind of feeling. I think this is just a really cool coming of age story. And Kamala Khan is a beloved character in the new pantheon that they have.
Yes.
So I think having Captain Marvel show up could do a bit of good for Brie Larson's involvement in the movie side of the MCU, because these shows are weaving in together. And like, why would you have a character that had so much love for this other superhero not kind of, you know, bump into her idol?
Exactly. And I mean, she's got all these Nissan commercials. Obviously, she's going to have some time to drop in and do a Disney, you know, just at least a cameo. And then with Spider-Man, when they're, you know, coming back into, I think this was, you know, Far From Home, when they have Captain America coming in and teaching the class on, you know, ethics, like, it's a small cameo, but it's more than nothing. Like, I appreciated that.
Yeah, definitely. So I think they can do it. I hope they do. Because I think that would work. If not now, then when, you know?
Right. But I just give them credit. I mean, Pakistani and Muslim life, they're showing a lot.
Yeah. And they're going into a lot of the history. They're talking about the what do they call it? The partition,
yeah.
You know, and you know, they were saying how before it was all just one big nation, and then, you know, the fighting and the civil war happened. And so for anyone who, and you don't have to be a globalist, you don't have to be, you know, it's not anti-national to want to know about the rest of the world. Right. For anyone who has a global mindset and the fact that we do live on a planet with billions of other people, this is it's interesting for me to get history in a palatable way, you know.
Well, not everybody is as well traveled as you are, but they should be. But it is a good question. You know, what's across the river? What's across the pond? What's down the street? You know,
you should want to know that. You know,
Didn't the National Lampoons build that hunger and that awareness? I mean, they went to Europe, they went to Vegas, they went to Chicago.
For me, it was things like Eurotrip, you know, like old crazy little movies like that, where I'm like, oh wow, I can travel across, you know. But you know, in a fun way where you can jab a little fun at the history, you can get the real dose of it. You know, I've always been the type to get information, at least get the information drip started with movies and TV shows, and then I go do my own research. So yeah, some of it's intrinsic motivation for that, but I do absolutely believe that having a wider view of things helps, even if you don't put it to immediate use, you know,
or
in your own life, to simply know more is never a bad thing.
But don't you find it funny? Because I know you've seen this as well. You travel the world, you get your passport, you go around, and the way that Kamala Khan and her best friend are labeling the group within the community, we do that right now?
That was that, and that's why I said it's very, I can't speak for other cultures, but it is very, that's a very Black thing.
Like the way they broke them down. Like, yeah, I'm like,
the Illuminati's, like that Illuminati's was hilarious to me, because I'm like, that's all the mothers and the sisters in our churches, you know, the ladies that sit in the first three rows, they control everything.
Yeah, you got the brosif, the tough man, the strong men that are always flexing for the camera. Then you got like the super, you know, the charismatic.
Like that was probably one of the coolest parts of this last episode was that labeling right there, because right or wrong, it's true, and people mm-hmm. respond to truth. They respond to something that is authentic and identifiable through all cultures. I'm sure every culture has that, whether you're, you know, a ritzy neighborhood Starbucks mom who can pick out everybody and tell you what all the moms and kids are doing, or you're a dad that coaches Little League, or you're an inner city church goer with a big family and cousins and friends, and everybody could identify with what they were doing as they walked through that celebration, labeling these groups that they had to go talk to. Like, that was ultimately identifiable.
Right. And then I love the where her is her friend Nakia? I'm saying her name.
Nakia. Mm-hmm.
So I loved how she split up.
Nakia, yeah.
Nakia, I got to go after the big white whale. It was her best friend's dad.
She
flipped him and was like, would you rather support your best friend or your daughter?
Yo, but that's some girl dad stuff too.
Dude.
That's the choice that girl dads have to make. Like, we live in a patriarchal world, and it's not woke. It's not woke to think like this. It's the fact that I have to restructure how I think and how I've talked my whole life. And if I had a son, I would not have paid that much attention to it, because we already live in a world that's built that way. But I want the world to be better for my daughter. And so now I'm like, holy crap. Okay, I don't consider myself woke, but man, that's true. I gotta watch what's going on for my daughter, because little simple things that I used to just kind of either blurt out or let go or just kind of brush aside, no, that's all bad for her.
Yeah.
So that part again, that whole scene was full of identifiable moments that were authentic and drawing you in.
Now, speaking of drawing you in, because I know we're about to close up here, we dealt with a lot of shame. Like, we talked about shame at the dinner table, shame while we're walking through with the Illuminati's. When you come face to face with the person that has been shamed so much, wasn't that a very full episode? Because she says, I've been wanting to talk to you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and then Cameron, he's like, I wanted to introduce you to. And I'm like, wait, man, this dude better not be an Inhuman. Because I was like, he's too nice.
There's something to his story, too.
I was like, he's too nice. He's an Inhuman. He's not who he's.
Yeah, there's something to his story. It'll hopefully come out. There's something to his story too, at least in the comics. So it depends on how much of the comics they adapt, because they often take their own path. So there's definitely something to his story also.
Well, Mr. Steve, this has been wonderful and beautiful. We'll go ahead and close it up. And last but most importantly, who you got, the Warriors or the Celtics in these finals?
I mean, I'm not a fan of either, in terms of, like, if I said I was a Warriors fan, I would definitely be lying. I'm a Sixers fan, so I take my lumps.
Yeah, you're all Eagles. Okay.
But because I'm a Sixers fan, I got to go with Warriors because I can't stand Boston being a Sixers fan.
you're not going to be about a hobble ball.
And I do like being witness to a new dynasty that really has ties to the one we grew up with the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, with Kerr? Yeah.
And I mean, you know, the Lakers were also one for some people who are slightly younger than us. So knowing how hard it is to do this, it's fun to see them. If they get one more, they are definitely the team of a generation. Like you said, you had early Boston. You had some 76ers, you know, back with Dr. J. You had, you know, the Lakers teams of the 80s. Then you had the Chicago Bulls in Detroit.
There we go.
Then, you know, and then you had the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq. Yeah. And so, you know, it's fun to see those pop up and then not have a dog in the fight. You know, that way I don't have to be fair weather. My Sixers got to the finals. They took a battle with Kobe. They took game one, and then he trounced us.
So
it's fun for me to just watch and be a fan because I'm not really big on pro sports lately because they that's a whole different subject matter. They do seem
we'll do that rigged. Again.
They seem kind of rigged. I'm kind of off put by the fact that, you know, like you got multi-million dollar athletes. I'm like, come on, let's play. Let's have some joy because you ain't got nothing else to worry about.
Right.
But when they're treating it, you know, it's a big subject. But
yeah, well, we can do that.
I like how Curry plays the game. I like the joy that they bring to it. I like that Draymond is kind of one of the new bad boys where he gets in people's heads. You know, he's like the modern Dennis Rodman. He works
yes,
hard.
Thank you.
Gets in their heads. You know, I like that Andrew Wiggins is having a rebirth in a different city, which proves that coaching and your team and your environment really do dictate a lot of your success because he came from Kansas and he was a superstar. He comes to the league where he's leading Minnesota and he fails miserably there, but you know, this man can play ball. What is it? And then he goes and, you know, under Kerr and under Curry and the rest of that team. And my man saved last game for him. Like, he was the reason they won.
Yeah, that's a whole discussion.
Like that.
Well, all right, man. Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much for dropping by. We'll have to do this again. And to all you out there, thank you all. Love you all. Hope you love me back. You can love, like, and share these messages and find Mr. RDQLUS also on podcast. Anything you want to say to him?
Nah, they can check my backlog on right here on Anchor on the podcast. You can get it on the iTunes app and anywhere else that you get your favorite podcast. If you look for Ridiculous Radio, RDQLUS Radio. And I'll be coming back with some new stuff. Some of the stuff we talk about is going to make it onto it. I'll be lighting the podcast up this summer to do a little bit of vlogging and traveling. It's gonna be good. Find me at Ridiculous Radio, RDQLUS.
You want to follow this man, you all. He goes a lot of places and gives his insight on a lot of wonderful things. And he, how do you say it? Vive la France. He speaks French.
oui. Vive la France.
All right, y'all. I'm gonna shut up. Y'all take care. Thank you so much, Steve. Y'all have a good evening.
Ah, merci beaucoup.